Hello, everybody.
Log Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very first radio show of the fall 2016 edition of Personal Dimensions of Free Choice Learning. I'm John Falk, and I am your erstwhile professor and as well as host of this first radio show. And in fact, I'll be the host of the next four radio shows as well. And I want to apologize beforehand. I've got a pretty nasty cold at the moment. And fortunately, I'm not contagious, at least over the radio. So you'll bear with me. And if I break down into a coughing fit, I hope that won't bother us too much. And if it gets too much, I might have to abort this radio show prematurely. But at any rate, we'll launch into this and see how I do and how you do. So first of all, I want to welcome all of you, I assume mostly the students in this year's course. Potentially, there are some certificate students as well tuning in, and if you are, I welcome you as well. So let me give you a sense of sort of how this hour, or perhaps less than an hour, will go. I'm going to begin by providing just sort of a overview to the whole Free Choice Learning Master's program. For many of you, this is your maiden voyage in this program. For some of you, you've been in here for a little while, so this might be review. And then I will provide a little bit more background about myself as well as this particular course. And we'll talk about this first module. I will constantly encourage anybody out there who is part of the course to call in and say hi. If you have a question, feel free to ask me a question related to the course or just related to anything that strikes your fancy at the moment, and we'll just sort of roll with that and see how it goes. Anyway, so in theory, there are three core courses in, there are five core courses, but in the Free Choice Learning Master's degree, but the three in the series are the Personal Dimensions of Free Choice Learning, the Sociocultural Dimensions of Free Choice Learning, and the Physical Dimensions of Free Choice Learning. And these courses basically explore the why, when, how, where, and with whom of free choice, science, and mathematics learning, and are designed around the framework of learning developed by myself and Lynn Dierking some 20 years ago. And this framework is called the Contextual Model of Learning. And basically, the contextual model of learning posits that that all learning is situated within specific sets of context or realities, and that we can understand those realities by thinking about learning as being influenced by the interaction of variables within what we have called the personal, the sociocultural, and the physical context. And we've tried to create these courses to support future education leaders, of which all of you are, in your understanding of the critical and unique ways in which individuals come to know and utilize science in their daily lives. We try and provide a healthy mix of theory and hopefully practice. And since most of you are working, most of the activities are designed to have you think about how these ideas apply within the context and settings in which you currently work. So the personal dimensions of free choice learning, which technically is the first in this series, but some of you may have taken some of the other courses, investigates sort of the fundamental roles of how all the basically psychological things that people bring with them to a setting, to a learning experience, their identity, their motivation, their interests, their emotions, their prior knowledge, their prior experiences, and how those influence the choices they make and how they perceive, and how these factors influence what and how they learn. As I suggested, hopefully the theory will be richly illustrated by real-world examples, many of which I'm hoping that each and every one of you brings to the table. Since all of you are experienced learners, you're all experienced free choice learners, and actually all of you are experienced free choice learning professionals. And rather than me being the sole expert in this course, actually there are almost a dozen of us experts in this course. All of you who are ostensibly the students, as well as myself and my teaching assistant colleague, John Hawkins. More about that later. But sincerely, the real gist of this course is designed to involve each and every one of you in thinking deeply about the issues involved, to participate in the discussion board, to use the readings and the activities as a springboard for conversation, discussion, and ultimately to share with each of you, for each of you to share with each other your own expertise and your own insights, which provide significant value in this conversation. As part of this course, we'll also introduce one aspect of evaluation, in particular front-end evaluation, which happens to be the evaluation that you do prior to the beginning of the development of a program, website, or exhibition. But this course, this particular course also provides an introduction to this way of thinking about and organizing how we think about learning, the contextual model. And also, particularly in this first week of the module, a lot of what we'll be talking about is just what do we even mean by learning? Learning is a complex topic, and in a minute I'll share with you some of my thoughts about learning. But ultimately, hopefully each and every one of you over the course of this week will think deeply about what you think learning is. Some of you, by way of introduction, a few of you have already begun that process, and I think the few of you who've already done that and posted on the discussion board a little bit about yourself and some of your initial thoughts about learning. And also, over the 10 weeks of this course, actually get into collecting and trying to make sense of data. And for many of you, this may be the first time you've ever read or conducted any social science research. And this, too, will be an interesting experience, and for many of you, a novel experience. Most of you have backgrounds in the sciences, but as you'll discover, the social science comes with its own sometimes peculiar and idiosyncratic vocabulary, its own unique way of thinking about the world, and even its own unique way of thinking about how one does research. So be prepared, those of you who haven't had much of an opportunity to read social science research before, to think about conducting social science research, let alone actually talking to people and interviewing people, this could be a really eye-opening and a novel experience for you. And there may be some, be forewarned, there may be some growing pains in this process as well. So let me begin, as appropriate to this theme, is giving you a little bit about my sense of what learning is. And as I said, as someone who's been studying learning now for the better part of 40 or almost 50 years. That's a pretty scary thought, but it's been a long time. I've been thinking about this. And it is complicated, and it's not easily. Learning is all something we sort of intuitively understand, but actually there is no single, totally uniformly and universally agreed on definition of learning, which is why I always like to start this course by having various people share their notions of learning. To be honest, our notions of learning, for the most part, our culture's notions of learning, have been significantly formed, and I might editorialize warped, by the fact that most of our experience with learning supposedly happens in school, but actually the learning that we've done in school represents just a tiny, tiny fraction of all the learning we do and all the learning we have done over the course of our lifetime. The truth of the matter is, learning is an ancient capability of living things. All living things learn. Even the simplest bacteria learn. And the roots of learning go back 3.7 billion years to the origins of life itself. The essence of learning is that it's this unique ability that living, animate things have to be able to adaptively react to their present conditions in ways that reflect and build on things that have happened to them in the past. Some of that learning, as it were, is encoded in our genes, but much of it is a dynamic process that is just inherent in being a living creature. And over those billions of years, life has evolved ever, ever more complex ways of responding to its environment adaptively, such that starting about 500 million years ago, with the evolution of nervous systems first and then ultimately brains, that process of learning became ever more complicated and ever more layered. We have many learning modules in our brain, not just one. We don't just learn a single way, but we learn in multiple ways. And learning isn't, as again commonly is thought of, as just about abstract ideas and language-based kinds of learning, of words and facts and concepts. That is clearly part of learning. But a lot of learning is how we learn to recognize and respond to other creatures, particularly other humans in our lives, in reading body language and reading social cues, reading facial expressions. That's all part of learning. We learn through modeling from our parents and modeling from our peers how to behave in certain situations. And we also learn a surprisingly number of bodily tasks and skills, everything from how to walk, to how to read, to how to talk, and ride a bicycle, use a computer. All of that requires learning. The interesting thing about learning is that it's surprisingly conservative. We learn all the time, but we're always, by nature, reluctant once we've come up with a pattern that we think has worked. We're reluctant to change that. But learning is something that is iterative, continuous. It's a never-ending process. And in general, learning is always informed by what we have done before, our interests, what we're interested in, our prior knowledge, our prior experience, our self, our identity, our motivation. Learning is always a social process. By and large, we rarely learn anything by ourselves, and even those things we learn by ourselves are socially, the psychobabble word is mediated by others in our world, whether it's on the media we see on television or the printed page or on a computer screen or in an exhibit. All of those are socially mediated because somebody else created those. And it always takes place in a specific location. So we don't learn in the vacuum. We learn in space and time. And we evolve to encode the things that we remember with a spatial and temporal stamp on it, so that we tend to remember not only an idea or a word or a concept, but where we were and who we were with and when that idea or concept or action happened. And then finally, as I mentioned before, all of that happens cumulatively over time. We build up experiences, we build up memories, we build up neural nets of memories in our brains. And collectively, those four dimensions, the personal, social, cultural, the physical, and the temporal, are the components of the contextual model learning. So let me pause at this point, because I've been rambling on now for more than 15 minutes, and let me encourage any of you out there who may be listening in real time to feel free to call in if you have any questions or comments. The call-in number is 657-383-1722. Once again, that call-in number is 657-383-1722, and feel free to call in and chat with me. I'd love to hear from you. So let me also take this moment to introduce myself. As I said, my name is John Falk, and I'll tell you a little bit about myself. As I hinted, I've been doing this stuff called trying to understand why people, how people, and where people learn, particularly learning that happens when they have some control over that, not absolute control. We never have absolute control over our learning, but some control. And when we have some control, we call that free choice learning. And for those of you who are in this program for the first time, Lynn Durkin and I came up with this term free choice learning to distinguish it from the usual dichotomy of formal and informal learning or non-formal learning. Get away from the notion that it's about the place you are. It's not about the setting, although the setting does make a difference. What really determines whether it's free choice learning or not and really changes the nature of the learning process is the learner's motivation and their ability to perceive that they have some choice and control over their learning. And that can and often does happen in places like museums or zoos or aquariums, or when walking outside or talking with one's friends or surfing the internet, although those contexts can be quite constrained as well. But it also can happen in a school context. It doesn't always happen in the school context. We don't always let learners and classrooms have choice and control, but that doesn't mean they can't have choice and control in what we do. That, too, is free choice learning. Now, obviously, some people think it's kind of strange that we have a free choice learning course at a university, at a formal education institution. How could that be free choice? And actually, it's not a problem because actually every one of you is a free choice learner because nobody is forcing you to be a graduate student and take this course. You have choice and control. The fact that I and others have created a curriculum doesn't change the reality that ultimately you have choice and control. In the same way, when you watch television and you've got the clicker in your hand, you don't determine what the content of the television show that you're watching, but you ultimately have the choice whether to watch that show or not. You're not compelled to watch that television show. And therefore, watching TV is a free choice activity, even though the content of what you're viewing, much like the content of this course, has been defined by somebody else. That doesn't make it not free choice. So, anyway, I've been doing this a long time. I have really diverse research interests. My research spans everywhere from trying to understand how communities and organizations collectively support the public learning. I've done a lot of research on particularly what kinds of learning result from the public's use of places like museums and zoos, science centers. And at the other end of the continuum, as you will read in this course, I've also done a lot of thinking and writing about literally how individuals and collections of individuals make the choices they do and how their self, their identity, influences those choices and ultimately influences what and how they learn. Let me also introduce two other people to you. One is John Hawkins. John is a master's student in the free choice program here at Oregon State University. And he's completed all his coursework and is working on his capstone project, and I'm his advisor. And John has kindly agreed to act as the TA, teaching assistant, for this course. And he'll be helping me primarily by monitoring and supporting the online discussion. And John, in fact, was good enough to post a little video about himself. And if you're listening out there in real time, John, I'm going to encourage you to call in at 657-383-1722. And you can say hi to everybody in person. But if not, I encourage everybody to watch John's little posted video, and he'll be chatting with you as part of the discussion. The other person I wanted to introduce, and if you're involved in the master's program, you actually won't meet her, but sort of in parallel, there's a certificate program that is running, and in theory, on these radio shows, we might be joined by some of the certificate students, and the instructor for that certificate program is, I guess, technically me, but the real nuts and bolts instructor who is really managing that program is a woman by the name of Erin Pick. And she is has a background in museums, including 10 years as a museum professional, mostly in art and history museums, which I think is great. And she has a master's degree in museum studies from Buffalo State, SUNY. Obviously located in Buffalo, New York. And if by chance Erin is listening, I encourage her to call in and say hi as well. But at any rate, so much for the big picture. Maybe I can take a few minutes and give you a little bit more detailed information about how this course itself, this particular personal dimensions of free choice learning, is going to run. I'm going to take a break, take a sip here, some liquid. Okay. So, it's a one-quarter course. Again, for those of you who are first-time students in this particular program, having been enrolled in school maybe for a while and perhaps have never been on the quarter system, what I can say is you need to hang on to your hat if the quarter goes really, really quickly. And And so you need to, oh, somebody here, let me see who's joining us. Oops, they just got off the phone. I'm so sorry, I missed. If you just call back. Maybe that was, I think that may have been John who called in. Sorry, I missed that. Call in again, and I'll catch you. I got otherwise preoccupied here. So anyway, the course goes really quickly. One of the course is organized into 5 2-week modules, and each module begins with a brief narrative. There's a video designed to provide an overview. There are readings, there are activities. At the beginning of each module, there's a radio show. Unlike this week, most of the radio shows I have guests, experts in these areas, who I invite to help sort of chat and frame the conversation as we begin to think about the course and the topic for the module. I wish I could say we're going to really go into depth on things like interest and knowledge and motivation and identity. Advanced organizers, we're going to cover a lot of topics in a relatively short time. So, again, this is not, you aren't going to end up with a degree in educational psychology by the time you're done with this, but hopefully you'll have a pretty good sense of at least some of the big ideas that are important. And particularly what hopefully you'll begin to appreciate is that other people who are in the field have thought deeply about many of these issues that you're involved in on a day-to-day basis. And you can begin to improve and build your practice based on some better ideas. Okay, so let me grab who this is. Hello, welcome to our radio show. Who do I have with me?
Hi, John. Oh, sorry. Hi, John. This is Amber Inwood calling in.
Oh, hi, Amber. How are you?
I am good, thank you.
Great. Thank you so much for calling.
Thought I'd give the system a go.
lovely.
I just have a really very quick question, just given,
actually,
you know, you mentioned.
Amber, before you your quick question, why don't you give us a three-sentence introduction of who you are.
My name is Amber Inwood. I am Australian. I have been an informal educator now for about 10 years, work for both the Bishop Museum in Hawaii and also the Nauticus here in Norfolk, Virginia.
Great. Okay. So, what's your question?
My question kind of came out about how really you said you've kind of been researching in the field for, I guess you said 30 odd years, 40 years?
Well, somewhere between 30 and 50, long time.
30 and 50, yes. So, and it's my understanding that, you know, the last couple of decades or so of the last century were pretty significant for free choice learning and kind of how things have changed. So I guess my question to you, is there any, like, really big aha moments for you as a researcher that kind of changed your mind or kind of made you reflect differently on what learning is?
That's a really interesting question, and I would say yes. So appreciate, if you can, it may be hard to appreciate that. Literally, when I was going to starting to learn about how people learn back in literally the middle of the 20th century, for nearly 50 years, the predominant learning model had been behaviorism. And there was a lot of, around this very time, there was a lot of turmoil in the, and within the psychology world about the nature of learning and basically rejecting behaviorism. And for those of you who don't know what behaviorism is, behaviorism is the notion, it's basically stimulus and response. That the way people learn is that everybody learns the same way. And the key to getting people to learn is to provide the right stimulus. So if I can provide the right kind of instruction, be that in terms of a lecture, be that in terms of an exhibit, or even the message in a book or on a website, then everyone should learn it. And if they don't learn it, there's one of two problems. Either A, they're stupid or something's wrong with them, or B, maybe, but of course that's unlikely, that the instructor didn't quite explain it the right way. Now, needless to say, that's the prevailing model that not only was in schools and museums, at that time, it's still the prevailing model in schools and museums and other such settings today, where, again, most people design educational experiences with the assumption that every learner is fundamentally the same, and if you just can crack the code of how to present that information, then you can figure out how to get them to learn that. Well, over the first couple decades of my career, there was a growing appreciation that, lo and behold, every learner is unique, and that every learner makes sense of the world in a unique way. And variously called constructivism, or social constructivism, the idea that the meaning that people make depends first and foremost upon what they already know and have already thought about, rather than what was presented. That was a huge aha moment. And then those ideas certainly were critical in informing a lot of my thinking and changed the way I thought about how you actually both study as well as support the public learning. And then more recently, the work that I've been doing in terms of thinking about identity and self have also radically shifted my thinking. And that we'll talk more about that over in the third module, around the six-week point of this course, where we really realize that not only do people uniquely make sense of this, but that this, too, is influenced by influences the choices we make in very profound ways, and that we can begin to think about learning as a process of filtering the world through our sense of self. And that, too, has had a really big shift in my thinking. So we'll talk more about that. Prior knowledge and experience and interest is a lot of what we'll be talking about over the next few weeks. And then we'll segue into that second part of my aha moment, the more recent one related to self and identity. But those of you who would have been old enough to be around and read the things I wrote 40 years ago would see that what I wrote 20 years ago looked different, and what I wrote right today looks different than what I wrote 20 years ago. It's been an evolution, for sure.
Awesome. Thank you, John. I'll get off the phone now.
Okay. Thanks so much for calling, Amber. And hopefully you've broken the ice and maybe somebody else will call in. Thanks. Bye.
No problem. Bye-bye.
So, meanwhile, back at the module, and please do call in. It's not that painful. Again, the number is 657-383-1722. I'll try and pay attention to my little board here so I can see if somebody's calling. So, as I said, every module begins with a one-hour radio show. We usually begin the module with a lot of readings, and I will be unapologetic. There's a lot of readings in the course, and there's a lot more recommended readings. I encourage you to really keep up with these readings and to contribute to the discussion board. As you know, part of your grade is completing these biweekly assignments with modules. You also get a grade. For participating in on the discussion. These online courses are not like a lecture class where it's all about the final and you can just sort of do the reading at the end of the course. Trust me, if you fall behind, it becomes really, really hard to catch up. So you really need to just invest a little bit of time every other day over the course of every week and bite the bullet. And think of this course as just an ongoing process. I really strongly encourage you to tune into these radio shows live so you can call in with questions if you have any. However, I and other people who design these courses certainly appreciate that people work. And although we've tried to set them up at the end of the day, 4 o'clock Pacific time, 5 o'clock Mountain time, 6 o'clock Central time, and 7 o'clock Eastern time, you can always download these radio shows as a podcast and listen to it at your leisure. All the shows are 1 hour, as I said. Most of the shows, except for the very first and the last one, I'll have some special guests. So, for example, except for this show, which was delayed until Friday because I was this past Wednesday I was in Glasgow, and I didn't feel like dealing with the time difference and having this show, doing this show at 1 o'clock in the morning, local time. All the rest of the shows will be on Wednesdays, and they've all been scheduled. The next show is in roughly 2 weeks on Wednesday, October 5th, and my special guest will be Dr. Nancy Stout. And then the third show will be Wednesday, October 19th, and my special guests will be Dr. Scott Patterson and Lynn Deering. The fourth show is Wednesday, November 2nd, and again, Dr. Lynn Deering, who wrote the book on front-end evaluation, will be my special guest. And then finally, I'll do the last show myself, and that show is really designed as much as anything to have you call in and ask questions that you might have about your final projects. All the readings were selected to provide as broad a base for entry into understanding the personal dimensions of free choice learning as I could. Most, but not all, were written with practitioners in mind. A number of them were written by me, and so apologies beforehand if that's a problem. As I posted in the discussion board, there are 2 required textbooks, which many of you may have already bought, but the library informed me literally yesterday, and I posted it yesterday, that those books are available for free as ebooks if you want to access those books that way. The discussion board questions are designed to prompt you to think about a specific aspect of the reading, but also to draw on other readings and your own personal experience. But one of the things that I really encourage you to do, we want you to state an opinion. We want you to have discussions based on what you think is the answer to the questions posed. But rather than this just be the TASTE committee, we really encourage you to back up, to get in the habit of backing up your assertions with references, either references from the readings or references from other readings. And this is a way to cross-fertilize for each other our thinking about these topics by bringing in our own opinions, but clearly the opinions of other people, and to suggest that opinions have more weight when they have a little authority behind them. Obviously, when you read my books, you'll see that I followed my own advice, and I offer lots of opinions, but wherever possible, those opinions are backed up with research and findings from other people. And that makes it a more convincing argument and a more authoritative argument, and begins to build a foundation for a real profession as opposed to just a craft. So, do the readings, participate in the discussion. These set the tone for what follows the rest of the week. Post early, post often. John will be monitoring, John Hawkins will be monitoring that discussion boards on a regular basis. I'll check in on a more periodic basis, probably on a weekly basis, just to read where things are going. And if I feel inclined, if I feel that things have really drifted, or I have some strong concerns about some of the comments, or strong positive feelings about some of the comments that are being made, I'll weigh in. But more likely, I'll be sitting in the background just listening and watching as you guys talk about these things. Finally, each week includes an activity. It is essential that you complete each weekly activity in a timely manner. As I've designed this class to be a continuous progression each week, building off the activities and thinking of the previous week. If, as I've said before, if you fall behind, you're going to find it really hard to catch up. And also, you'll see from a grading structure that's highlighted in the syllabus that there are consequences to falling behind. Your grade will suffer. I start taking points off each day. Assignment is late. I will tell you my philosophy is that, in my mind, all of you in this class start out with an A, and only as you don't meet the assignments or in a timely way do you fall away from that grade. So let me, there's somebody calling. Let me tap into who that person is. Hello there. Welcome.
Hi, John. This is Yuna calling in.
Oh, hi, Yuna. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am. I've been better, but I'm generally just fine. I'm hanging in there. As I had Amber do, why don't you briefly introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Yuna Choi. I am a first-year doctoral student in the Free Choice Learning PhD program, and I don't have extensive professional experience working in free choice learning settings, but I focused a little bit on that aspect when I was getting my master's in education, and I generally have a great interest in this field, so very excited to be taking this course.
Great. Did you have a question, or did you just want to say hi?
Oh, I do have a question, actually, because you said that your writing and your thinking has evolved, you know, 40 years ago versus 20 years ago versus now.
Yep.
So what are you specifically interested in or working on these days? Like, what is piquing your interest, and what are you researching nowadays?
Okay. Well, as I said, I mean, I've currently have, to be honest, way too many projects. I currently, at this very moment, am almost embarrassed to say that I have, I'm part of 7 NSF projects right now, including one of the ones that you're working with, called Synergies. And, you know, I don't want to do an injustice to all of those various projects. I have a real interest in all those various projects, which span actually 3 of the projects are involved in trying to build more of an ecosystem approach to thinking about how people learn and are trying to find ways to make connections between in and out of school experiences of kids. I also have a project going on involving big data, where I'm using big data tools to try and measure the long-term impact over time of free choice learning experiences by tracking the changes in people's searches for in Google or comments on Facebook or Twitter or searches on specific websites based on having watched a television show or gone to an exhibition. I have a couple projects that are involved in trying to assess the whether or not and to what extent different kinds of educational experiences, including schooling, school experiences, science center experiences, television shows people have watched, internet searches, what are the relative contributions of all of those kinds of learning experiences to someone's long-term interest and engagement in science. But probably the thing that has consumed a good deal of my time and energy is, and I've included in the readings a draft chapter, I've been working on a book, well, for over 30 years, but seriously writing and rewriting for almost 5 years now, a book which I just sent off to the publisher about a month ago in first draft, well, near final draft form, called Born to Choose, which is actually on the evolution of choice and self and well-being and the interrelationship between the choices we make and how that's evolutionarily based on our desire to maximize our well-being, all of which is mediated, controlled by our perception of self, and in particular the ratio of self to other. But once again, more about that later in the course. But needless to say, I've been busy. And in my copious free time, I not only direct all those projects, I also direct a not-for-profit called the Institute for Learning Innovation. And I try and get my research done and write and do a few other things, too. So, anyway, I don't know if that answered your question. Maybe maybe
that's
too much.
That's great. You do just about everything.
Well,
thank you,
yeah, it's a little bit too much at the moment, but that's the way it is. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling in. Okay. So, finally, at the end of each module, or potentially each week, there's an activity. And these activities are designed often to have you talk to other people, collect a little data, and basically apply some of the things that you've been reading and understanding in a very practical way to see how these ideas work in the real world. A good chunk of time in the course, about 3 to 4 weeks of the 10-week course, is devoted to you doing your own little study, trying to apply what you've learned about the personal dimensions of free choice learning through a vehicle of a front-end evaluation, which to try and see if picking a topic that you might want to explore, either in the real world of work or one that you might come up with, and try and understand how would someone's prior knowledge or their interest or their experience or their identity or their motivation influence what the design of that particular educational intervention. And that's the essence of that. We are using as the platform for this course Canvas. I will confess this is my maiden voyage on Canvas. It may be your maiden voyage as well, but everybody assures me that Canvas, and so far it seems to be pretty intuitive and pretty straightforward. We'll all find out. You know, hopefully it'll be obvious how to post assignments, but if that becomes a problem, we'll figure that out collectively or individually. I'd encourage you all, if you have any specific questions, please don't hesitate to email me, or my email is listed in the syllabus. You can also access me, I believe, to email me through Canvas. If you have questions, you can also obviously email or call John. If you have questions about the discussion, I would encourage you, if you have really questions about the content of the course or questions about the grades or anything that has to do with the nuts and bolts of assignments, probably better off emailing me or contacting me rather than John. But I'll trust that if John has a question that he can't answer, he'll let me know. I will say the joy of this being an online course is obviously you can do it in the early morning, you can do it in the evenings. The university that started at a sort of a strange time in midweek this quarter, but that's good because the meat of the week and the meat of the modules then fall over the weekend, and since many, if not all of you, are working, that's a great thing. I should also say that as I was this past week, I was out of the country. I'm not going to be out of the country for the rest of this quarter, but almost every other week I'm going to be on the road, but I'll be monitoring. The good news is because it's an online course, I can do that. I can monitor the course from wherever I am. So end of next week, I'll be off to Phoenix and for a couple days, then I'll be back. And then where am I going after that? I'm going to Utah for a few days. I'll be back. Then I'll be in Washington State outside Seattle on the Olympic Peninsula in Port Townsend for a few days. And then I'll be back. And then I'm actually going to Yosemite for a day and a half. I'm on the National Education Board of the National Park Service, and we have a national advisory meeting, which nicely will be in Yosemite. I regret that because of my schedule, I literally can only be in Yosemite for a day and a half, but there, so it goes. And but I should have internet access wherever I'm going, and I will be online monitoring the course from wherever I am. At any rate, so we're almost out of time here, but anybody else, there's still time. If somebody else wants to call in, we certainly have time for one or two more folks. If anybody's listening wants to call and say hi and ask a question. Even if you don't want to ask a question, feel free to just call and say hi. It's always great for me to hear you live. As I say, I was just in Glasgow, Scotland, where I was talking to the people who are actually at the front end of redesigning a fine arts collection there in Glasgow. And Glasgow museums do really, really interesting work over the last 15, 20 years. They've totally reconceptualized their museums. And this is the third one that they are doing in this process. And I was talking about self and identity and how you think about visitors in different ways as unique individuals with very specific who visit museums in order to fulfill specific needs and interests, and how to try and design museums in ways to support those needs and interests. And if I wasn't sick, it would have been a really grand time, but it was a good time anyway. So, as I'm about to lose my voice, I think I'm going to bring this first radio show to an end, about a minute or so under budget. But again, I want to thank all of you who have listened in real time or potentially by downloading this. I want to welcome everybody to this course. I'm really looking forward to teaching this quarter. This is indeed my favorite course. I've really enjoyed teaching it over the years. It's a subject near and dear to my heart. And as I indicated to Amber and implied in talking to Una, answering their questions, these are topics that I've thought about long and hard over many, many years, and hopefully I can share not only some of my interests, but more importantly, my passion and with you about these topics over the next several weeks. So I look forward to getting to know all of you online and hopefully down the road in person. So again, welcome to the course, and I look forward to chatting with you again in the near future. Bye now.